Lord Peter Wimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter and Peter Jones as Bunter, with Bernard Archer as Sir Julian Freke. Whose Body by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted by Chris Miller in 5 episodes. Episode 5, Bunter Brings a Letter. Lord Peter Wimsey, investigating the appearance of an unidentified corpse in a Battersea bathroom and the simultaneous disappearance of a financier, Sir Reuben Levy, now knows that a murder has been committed. To help confirm his suspicions as to the identity of the murderer, he's had his friend, Inspector Parker, bring along to his flat an unsuspecting medical student from St. Luke's Hospital, Battersea.
So you don't like detective stories then, Mr. Pickett?
Oh, yes, Lord Peter.
Uh-huh.
No, I was only saying that the thing I object to in him is the way fellows remember every blooming thing that's happened to them within the last 6 months.
Indeed.
Reel it all off like a page of poetry, they do. It ain't like that in real life.
Well, no, but writers have to consider their readers, you see. A real conversation would be so long and twaddly and tedious, nobody would have the patience to read it. Same with police statements, eh, old Parker?
Certainly. A man doesn't say to the police, last Friday I went out at 10 a.m. to buy a mutton chop, and as I was turning into Mortimer Street, I noticed a girl of about 22 with black hair and brown eyes, wearing a green jumper, check skirt, Panama hat and black shoes, riding a Royal Sunbeam cycle at about 10 miles an hour on the wrong side of the road.
No, no.
It amounts to that, of course, but it's really wormed out of him by a series of questions.
Well, yes, but I bet you most people will find it jolly difficult to remember, even if you ask them the right questions.
Why should I know?
Well, do you mean if I were to ask you, you would in a general sort of way, what you were doing, say, a week ago today, last Tuesday, that is, you wouldn't be able to tell me a thing about it, or have?
Well, I'm sure I shouldn't.
Oh, come.
Except that I was in at the hospital, as usual, I suppose.
Well, come now, Mr. Piggott. Look, I'm sure you recollect what work you were doing in the, in the dissection room that day, for example.
Lord, no. Well, not for certain, Lord.
Look, I would bet you half a crown to 6 months that you'll remember within 5 minutes.
I'm sure I can't.
Let's see, shall we? All right, then. Now, do you keep a notebook of the work you do when you dissect? You know, drawings or anything?
Oh, yes.
Right, well, think of that, then. Now, what was the last thing that you did in it?
Well, that's easy. Only did it this morning. It was leg muscles.
Good. Well, now, turn back the pages of your drawing book in your mind. What came before that?
Some animals.
Huh?
Still legs. I'm doing motor muscles at present. Yes, that's it. I remember now. It was old Cunningham's demonstration on comparative anatomy.
Uh-huh.
I did rather a good thing of a hare's leg.
And what day was Mr. Cunningham's lecture?
Friday.
Friday. I see. Right. Well, now, turn back again. What comes before that?
I've no idea, Lord.
Now, look, think of the open book in your mind's eye. What's opposite your hare's leg?
Yes. Something coloured. Round. Oh, yes, it's a hand.
Good.
Oh, and before that, there's a drawing of a set of arms.
Excellent. Did you make those on the Thursday?
No, not in the dissecting room on Thursday.
Ah, I see.
It must have been Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Wednesday afternoon, after we'd seen those tetanus patients. I remember going back because I wanted to finish them.
I see. And when did you start them?
Tuesday, I suppose.
And were they a man's arms or a woman's arms?
Oh, a man's.
So last Tuesday, a week ago today, that is, you were dissecting a man's arms in the dissecting room.
Well, yes, I suppose so.
Sixpence, please.
Bravo. By Jove, Lord Peter.
Yeah, now, wait a moment. You know a lot more about it than that. You've no idea how much you know, Mr. Biggott. You know what kind of a man he was, for a start.
Well, he was a pauper from the workhouse, I suppose.
Well, what was his skin like? Now, think back. Was it young, fair skin?
Oh, no. No, ordinary skin, I think.
Uh-huh. A lean, stringy arm, perhaps, with no extra fat anywhere?
Oh, no. I was rather annoyed about that. I wanted a good muscular arm, but it was poorly developed, and the fat got in my way.
A sedentary man who didn't do much manual work, what?
That's right.
About how old would you put him?
Oh, 50. About 50.
Good. We'll see what a fine memory our young friend has, Charles.
Yes, indeed, I do.
Well, let's see what else you remember, Mr. Pickett. There were other students at work on the same body, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So, who's doing the head?
Old Freak.
Freak?
That's Sir Julian Freke.
Is
you know, the great neurologist.
Yes.
He's in charge of us. Yes, that's right. He bagged the head for himself. I remember little Binns was very cross about that.
Oh, I see. And what was Sir Julian doing with the head?
Well, he called us up and gave us a lecture on spinal hemorrhage and nervous lesions. Oh, and the chap was a Jew. I noticed that, too.
You see how easy it is.
Oh, and another thing, Lord Peter.
What's that?
Tommy Pringle made a joke about it, so I remember. Tommy was doing the alimentary canal, and he thought it funny that a workhouse pauper should, well, should have so much food inside him. He'd come by his death shortly after a full meal, you see.
Very interesting, Mr. Pickett. Now you see how much you can remember. On Tuesday week, you were dissecting the arm muscles of a middle-aged Jew of sedentary habits, who, shortly after eating a heavy meal, had died of some injury producing spinal hemorrhage and nervous lesions, and who was presumed to come from the workhouse, yes?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Pickett. I think that proves my point, what?
I don't think our young friend suspected anything, do you, Whimsy?
For him, Charles, it's just been a delightful evening drinking the best wine that he's ever tasted.
Whereas to you, it's almost conclusive proof you're right.
Exactly.
But are you sure you're not making a mistake, Peter? I'm still as full of objections to this idea as an egg is of meat.
So am I, old man. That's why I want to dig up the man who was buried in a pauper's grave at the end of last week. Have you got the exhumation order?
Yes, for tomorrow afternoon.
Good. Well, if Lady Levy identifies him positively...
Oh,
it's beastly, Charles, I know. But I'm sorry, it has got to be done.
Does it?
Now, look here. According to the Chelsea Workhouse, a dead man, not unlike Levy in general outline, was delivered to Freke on Monday for purposes of dissection. Mm. That night, Levy himself disappeared after visiting Freke in Battersea. The next morning, the Chelsea corpse, somewhat disguised, was found in Mr. Phipps's bath, not 100 yards from the hospital.
Yes, but why, Peter?
The motive? An old jealousy. 20 years ago, Freke was almost engaged to a Miss Christine Ford. And Levy, who was nobody then, romped in and carried her off under his nose.
But 20 years,
oh,
Peter.
I know. But Freke's vanity was hurt, you see. He felt humiliated. It wasn't the girl he bothered about. It was having his aristocratic nose put out of joint by a little Jewish nobody. Now, that is the thing that rankled Charles.
Yes, well, that sounds all right, Peter, but...
Now, look at the evidence, if you don't believe me, Charles. The man who went to Levy's house and slept in his bed knew the house well, had red hair, and was slightly smaller than Levy. Freke is a friend of the family, about 5'11", and has an auburn mane. Mm. Now, take the other side. The man who put the Chelsea vagrant in Mr. Phipps's bath had to carry it across the slippery roof on a wet night. Freke is a member of the Alpine Club. The man wore surgical gloves and let the body down from the roof with a surgical bandage. Freke is a surgeon. The man undoubtedly lived in the neighborhood. Freke lives next door. Every time we look at Freke, he leads somewhere. Whereas Milligan and Phipps and Crimplesham and all the other people we've honored with our suspicions simply lead nowhere.
Yes, but it's still not as simple as you make out, Peter. I mean, what was Levy doing in that surreptitious way at Freke's on Monday night?
Well, you have Freke's explanation. He was concerned about his health.
Oh, Rob, that won't do.
No, it won't. So, why did Freke lie?
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, Charles. Because Levy, contrary to all expectations, had been seen at the corner of the road. Now, that was a nasty accident for Freke. He'd reckoned, you see, on nobody's ever connecting Levy with Battersea.
Well, then we come back to the first question. Why did Levy go there?
Well, I don't know. I wish I did. But Freke expected him, all right, and he made arrangements to let him in himself, so that his man Cummins shouldn't see who the caller was.
But didn't the caller leave at 10?
Oh, Charles. Cummins heard someone say good night, that's all. Clearly, Freke walked out of the front door, came in a few moments later at the side door, went up to the library, and rang for Cummins, to prove that he was there. Simple, you see.
And Levy was there, too. Dead.
Certainly. Probably in an adjacent room. Then Freke switched the bodies round, dressed up in Levy's clothes, and went to Park Lane to establish that Levy had returned home. An hour or two later, he left Park Lane, came back to Battersea, and went about the business of depositing the vagrants in Phipps's bath, complete with Crimplesham's pince-nez.
Yes, but why?
Why, indeed. Pure accident, perhaps, or pure devilry.
All right, Peter. But why did he concoct such an elaborate scheme at all? Why go to the trouble of switching the two bodies, all the rest of it?
Because, like all murderous Charles, Freak had to face the problem of disposing of the body. But he realized that there was no harm in leaving around a corpse as such, provided there was no discernible connection between himself and that particular man. Yeah. It nearly worked, too. By disguising the vagrant and lying about the length of the man's illness at the inquest, Freak made sure that not even the workhouse doctor who'd sent him along to St. Luke's would realize it was the same fellow.
Well, what went wrong, then?
A chain of unforeseen accidents, really. Chiefly Levy's being recognized, and the fact that you and I, who were working on the two ends of the case, were good friends. Must have been a nasty shock for Freak at the inquest. He knew of my connection with the Battersea end of the mystery, and then you were introduced to him as the detective in charge of the Levy investigation.
By your mother!
Precisely, yes. Irving. Freak's aim in life, you see, was to prevent the two ends of the problem from linking up.
Yes.
And there at the inquest were you and my mother. Two of the links, literally, side by side.
Yes, my lord?
Ah, Bunter. Beastly foggy morning, ain't it?
A regular pea super, my lord.
I was just wondering whether to go out.
I would not advise it, my lord. Really, I wouldn't.
Well, I've got to go out this afternoon for the exhumation. May as well get accustomed to it now. You better come along to that, too, incidentally, Bunter. Make sure I keep wrapped up warm.
Very good, my lord. But if your lordship will forgive my mentioning it, you're only just now getting over your attack of the other night.
Yes, well, that was something quite different, Bunter. Mere nerves, and fog don't make any difference to one's nerves. Besides, I happen to be going to see a Harley Street nerve specialist. In fact, Bunter, I am going to pay a call on the greatest urologist in London.
Yes, I see. Breathe in once more. Perfect. Excellent, Lord Peter. You may put your coat back on now, and please sit down.
Thank you, Sir Julian.
Now, you had these attacks frequently in 1918, you say?
Yes, I was very ill for some months.
And when did you last have an attack like this?
About 9 months ago. I was being worried by certain family matters. It was a question of deciding about some investments, and I was largely responsible.
Yes. And this latest attack...
Well, I was worried. I suddenly found myself faced with a very alarming contingency.
Unexpectedly?
Very unexpected indeed.
Yes. Now, this unexpected contingency was personal to yourself.
It demanded an immediate decision as to my own actions, yes. In that sense, it was certainly personal.
Quite so. You were about to assume some responsibility, no doubt.
A very grave responsibility.
Affecting others besides yourself.
Affecting one other person vitally and a very great number indirectly.
I see. And does this responsibility still rest upon you?
Yes, it does.
You feel bound to carry through the course of action on which you've decided?
Oh, yes. Yes, I can't back out now.
Of course not. So, you're expecting further strain?
A certain amount, yes, Sir Julian.
I see. Well, you must exercise great care, Lord Peter. Your nerves are not all they should be.
No?
No. I'll give you something to strengthen them. It'll do you no permanent good, you understand, but it will tide you over a bad time. And I'll also give you a prescription.
Yeah, thank you.
Excuse me, one moment. Whose advice have you had till now, Lord Peter?
Sir James Hodges.
Oh, yes, yes. He was a sad loss to the medical profession. A really great man. True scientist. Here is the prescription, and if you'll just remove your coat again and roll up your sleeve, I'll deal with the necessity of the immediate moment.
Yeah, right here. Yeah. I say, Sir Julian, what's that you're going to stick into me? Bugs?
Not exactly. You've had injections before, Lord Peter, I'm sure.
A few.
Well, this won't hurt.
Yes, I've had them before, Sir Julian, and do know I don't care frightfully about them. No, Sir Julian.
As you like, of course, Lord Peter.
I'm afraid I'm rather a silly ass, but I never could abide those little gadgets. I had one once that went wrong and gave me a rotten bad time. They make me a bit nervous, you know.
In that case, it would certainly be better not to proceed with this part of the treatment. Very well, just take the prescription then and do what you can to lessen the immediate strain as far as possible.
Oh, yes, I'll take it easy, thanks. I'm much obliged to you, Sir Julian. Much obliged.
Goodbye, then, Lord Peter. And my regards to your mother.
Certainly, Sir Julian. Goodbye.
Yes, a scar on the arm, an appendicitis scar, and a mole just under the left breast. That should be sufficient. Could we have the towel over the head now? She mustn't see what's left of his face. Thank you. Inspector Parker?
Yes, Dr. Grimmel.
Could you ask Lord Peter to bring Lady Levy in now, please?
Mm.
Thank you. Dr. Colgrove?
I'm here.
Ah, good. Now, Dr. Colgrove, you attended this man in the workhouse. Do you recollect a scar like this?
No, Dr. Grimbold. I think Sir Julian Freke would bear me out.
Yes, well, there are reasons why Sir Julian can't be present. That's why I'm asking you.
Well, I'm quite certain I've never seen that scar before.
Thank you. Lady Levy, please come in. I don't want to distress you unnecessarily, but I'm going to ask you to look at a scar and see if you recognize it. Now, please take your time. You won't see anything more than you absolutely must.
Oh, Lord Peter.
It's all right, Lady Levy. Let's take my arm.
Thank you.
And now, Lady Levy, this appendicitis scar.
Oh, yes. Yes, I could never be mistaken about that. Oh, Reuben.
Just a moment more, please, Lady Levy. Do you also recognize this mole?
Oh, I think so. Yes, I'm sure, in fact. Oh, yes, that's where it was. Yes.
And this other scar, the three-cornered one just above the elbow?
Yes. Oh, yes. Reuben.
Lady Levy, I'm sorry, but I must ask you definitely. Do you, from these three marks, identify the body as that of your husband?
Well, I must, mustn't I? Nobody else could have them just the same, in just these places. It is my husband. It is Reuben.
Thank you, Lady Levy. You've been very brave and very helpful. Thank you, Lord Peter.
Come along then, Lady Levy. My mother's next door and she'll take you home.
Well, Inspector Parker.
Hey, Doctor.
I trust I can leave this painful business in your hands now.
Thank you. Robertson, tell Inspector Sugg to get going.
Yes, sir.
Shocking case, Inspector, quite shocking. I was, of course, most uneasy at the inquest, as you know. But to think that so distinguished a man, well, I can hardly believe it.
That's quite so, Dr. Grimbold. Peter. As I sent my men off...
Yes, I noticed them going, and I sent Bunter with them. Hope you don't mind. Thought I'd like to be represented at the kill.
Not a bit. That's why I sent Sugg. Poor devil, they've had him up on the mat at headquarters for bungling the case. All that evidence of tipsies about the nightclub was corroborated, you know. I was almost sorry for Sugg, so I sent him along to make the arrest.
Well, let's hope he gets there in time, then, Charles.
You think he might not?
I rather fear he might not. Oh, that'll be Bunter now, Charles. Bunter? Bunter?
My lord?
Well?
We got him, my lord.
Good grief. Alive?
Inspector Sugg was just in time, yes, my lord. He rang the bell and marched straight past Cummings up to the library. Sir Julian was doing some writing, and when the police burst in, he made a grab, if I may put it that way, for his hypodermic, my lord. But they were too quick for him.
Good for Sugg.
Yes, sir. Sir Julian was then searched thoroughly and has now been taken to prison.
Well, I'm damned.
Incidentally, my lord, Sir Julian asked me to convey to your lordship his congratulations. He acknowledged defeat, my lord, and spoke highly of your lordship's perspicacity and intelligence.
How charming of him.
Indeed, my lord. Sir Julian also wished me to tell your lordship that he appreciated your motive in calling on him this morning, conveying a warning, as it were.
Well, he tried to kill me for my pains.
Yes, my lord. Sir Julian remarked to me that he was pleased you had not underestimated his nerve in that matter. The injection he was on the point of administering to your lordship would have proved fatal, and according to Sir Julian, was undetectable, my lord.
He certainly is a point of crime, ain't he? Right from the start, Charles, you remember when we found the body in Phipps's bath with Quimpertram's pince-nez on its nose? We knew we were up against a blighter with a sense of humour.
Rather a macabre sense of humour, Peter.
True. And I wonder if we'll ever know all the details. Why he did it in that particular way.
Yes, my lord.
Hmm?
Sir Julian was writing a full confession when he was apprehended, my lord. It's addressed to your lordship, and Inspector Sarg allowed me to bring it with me, though it will have to go to the police eventually, of course.
Is that it? Yeah, thank you, Bunter.
Inspector Sugg did ask Sir Julian one or two questions, my lord, particularly as regards the body in Mr. Phipps's bath.
Well, Sugg did get rather the wrong end of the stick there. Tell us then, Bunter, O messenger of the gods, why Phipps?
It appears that Sir Julian intended to leave the body on the roof of Queen Caroline Mansions, my lord, but when he noticed Mr. Phipps's bathroom window open, it occurred to him how delightful it would be, the words are Sir Julian's, not mine, my lord, to deposit the corpse there. Sir Julian said that Mr. Phipps had once called on him with an anti-vivisection pamphlet and had chattered for a long time on the subject.
Poor little Phipps.
What about Crimplesham's pince-nez, Bunter?
Sir Julian explained that too, sir. It seems he was caught in the rush at Victoria that Monday afternoon and, on emerging, found the glasses involved in the astrakhan collar of his overcoat. The motive for leaving them on the body was, I believe, simply to mislead the police, but no doubt it is all explained in the letter.
Yes, it is, I think, Bunter. It's a deuced long letter, anyway. Dear Lord Peter, I prefer to acknowledge defeat, etc., etc., etc. Oh, dear. A lot of theoretical stuff about the criminal's conscience. Ah, yes, here we are. My original sensual impulse to kill Sir Reuben Levy had, over the years, become profoundly modified by my habits of thought. Through the animal lust to slay and the primitive human desire of revenge, there had been added the rational intention of substantiating my own theories for the satisfaction of myself and the world. Cool, ain't it?
Yes. And why did he wait so long?
Well, I went to early career. Not enough money to have absolute command of circumstance. Contented myself during that period with keeping up a friendly connection with Ruby Levy and his family. Yes, here we are now. It was not till I obtained the practical direction of St. Luke's Hospital that I found myself perfectly unfettered in the choice and handling of dead bodies. Of course.
There's one thing I would like to know, Peter. How did he get Levy to come round to Battersea that night?
Yes, how did he do it? Chelsea Workhouse, unknown vagrant, strong superficial resemblance to Sir Reuben. Hello, what's this? I decided that the fellow would suit my purpose very well, and accordingly I immediately put in train certain transactions in the city, which I had already sketched out in my mind.
Maybe it's those Peruvian oil shares, Peter.
By Jove, Charles, you know I believe you're right. Yeah, listen to this. On the Thursday and Friday of that week, I made private arrangements with various brokers to buy the stock of certain Peruvian oil fields which had gone down almost to waste paper. At this point,
I was, of course, careful not to let my name appear. And on Monday morning, the market in Peruvians opened briskly. Rumours had evidently got about that somebody knew something, and I was not the only buyer in the market that day. At lunchtime, I made my arrangements to run into Levy accidentally at the corner of the Mansion House. He expressed his surprise at seeing me in that part of London, and I simulated some embarrassment and suggested we should lunch together. I dragged him to a place a bit off the usual beat and there ordered a good wine and drank of it as much as he might suppose sufficient to induce a confidential mood. How are things going on change, Reuben?
All right. You thinking of joining us, Julian? What are you doing down here, having a little flutter?
As a matter of fact, yes, I am. I've been put on to rather a good thing. I don't want it to get about, but Have you heard about Peruvian oil?
Oh, I've heard rumors, but I've no idea what's going on. What's it all about? I thought the thing was hollow. It hasn't paid a dividend for 17 years.
No, it hasn't. But it's going to. I've got inside information. Look here. I'm not giving this away to everyone, but I don't mind doing you and Christine a good turn.
Well, it's very kind of you, old man, but I'm a cautious bird, you know. Always was. I'd like a bit of proof.
I'll give it to you. But it isn't safe here. I'll come round to my place tonight after dinner. I'll show you the report.
How did you get hold of it?
I'll tell you tonight. Come round after dinner, any time after 9, say.
Harley Street?
No, Battersea, Prince of Wales Road. I've got some work to do at the hospital. And look here, Reuben. Don't let on to a soul that you're coming.
All right. I won't say a word to anybody. I'll turn up about 9 o'clock. Are you sure you know what you're doing?
Trust me, old man. It can't go wrong. It simply can't go wrong. I knew that would fetch him. And incidentally, I killed him that evening while he was poring over a bogus company report I had concocted for him. And I was still prattling on about doing him a good turn as a symbol of our old friendship. If only he'd known. If only he'd known.
So, that's how he did it.
Yes. Do you know, Charles, I don't care frightfully about reading any more of this letter. Look, you better take it. All that coolness. All those brains. And yet...
I know what you mean, old man.
Charles, I think I shall give a dinner party. Mm-hmm. One night next week, Bunter. A dinner party to Mr. John P. Milligan and his secretary and to Messrs. Crimplesham and Wicks. All our suspects, in fact. I feel they deserve it for not having murdered poor old Levy.
Well, don't forget the Thipses, Peter.
On no account would I deprive myself of the pleasure of Mrs. Thipses' company, Charles. Bunter?
My lord.
Let's have a bottle of bubbly, shall we?
In that, the last episode of Whose Body, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael, Bunter, Peter Jones, Sir Julian Freak, Bernard Archard, Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe, Piggott and Dr. Colgrove, Geoffrey Beavers, Dr. Grimbold and Sir Reuben Levy, Wilfred Carter, and Lady Levy, Betty Cardinal. Bunter Brings a Letter was adapted by Chris Miller from the book Whose Body by Dorothy L. Sayers. The program was produced by Simon Brett. Thank you.